Welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. In this podcast, we dig into the exact playbooks that ABM practitioners are using today to get their first ABM program off the ground. We'll dig into how they're using their current tech stack in order to create scrappy programs that rely more on creativity than new technologies. So if you're looking for how to get ABM off the ground in your organization in the next 90 days, let's dive into this episode. Hello and welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. This is your host, Mason Cosby. And today I'm joined by Mike Alton, who is the chief storyteller of Agora Pulse. Mike, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me. This is going to be a lot of fun. This has become practically my life's work, it feels like. So it'll be really interesting, I think, to share some of the details with your audience.
Yeah, I was really excited when we started to do some of the show prep, because we're going to talk about essentially, like, how do you actually do podcasting in such a way that generates a lot of revenue and great relationships and build an ABM program in a relatively low cost way? And, like, probably not a secret to anybody that listens to the show or has followed me for anything. Like, I've been doing podcasting myself for about 4 years and, like, stumbled into, like, oh, it's crazy when you, like, talk to people and build a relationship when they have a problem, they think of you. It was, like, totally unintentional and serendipitous, and now it's become a very intentional process that we run with a bunch of clients. So I'm super excited to learn from you, because I think you said, like, I don't know, like, five podcasts you're doing right now. So I'm excited. So that said, when we think about targeting, like, every ABM program starts with the audience. So I'm curious for you, like, when you think about finding the audience, like, where are you typically going to look to find that audience?
From a platform perspective, it's 100% LinkedIn for us. You know, we're a B2B high-end SaaS management tool, one of the top tools in the world. You know, we're working with large agencies, large businesses, not solopreneurs or creators who are focused on, say, Instagram or TikTok. They're just going to be using those platforms natively. We want to work with folks who have, you know, 10 social profiles and teams of 10, 20, 100 or more people. LinkedIn is where we're going to go to find them.
I love it. As you were thinking through just even identifying that ICP to even think about from a targeting perspective, like, how did you guys determine, like, okay, these are people that are not just good fit customers, but are going to be good fit customers that want to join the show, and, like, to really drill down into, like, these are the people we're going after?
Well, I had a great answer until you said, want to join the show. That's the real catch, because as a company, we know our ICPs, or we're building our ICPs. We've been working with marketing agencies for, you know, a decade or more. So that was our first really easy to identify ICP. Any marketing agency with 10 or more employees or clients, we want to work with them. Easy. And we were able to fairly easily find lists of agencies that are in our demographics, which are, like, North America, Western Europe, those kinds of places, and identify company size and that kind of stuff. That's all demographic information that's either on LinkedIn or available from, you know, Clearbit, Apollo, some service like that. We started in the past couple of years adding additional ICPs, customers that we wanted to break into, or industries we wanted to break into, like retail and hospitality and education and government and so on. Those started to become a little bit more of a challenge, because we were used to working with agencies where 9 times out of 10, we're just talking directly to the agency owner to get that ball rolling. And then eventually they'd bring in other team members if they needed to. With these other, we still have a challenge today where we're trying to figure out, do we need to talk to the people who actually use our tool, which would be like a social media manager, or do we need to talk to their boss, who probably doesn't touch social media, is happy to not touch social media, but they're the ones with the purse strings. So we're still sorting that out, which is why it becomes a challenge a bit of who we talk to and target to come on the show. But retail, hospitality, and B2B are the other three ICPs that we've decided to target. We've created lists of target prospects, gone back and forth of whether or not we're talking to executives or practitioners. At the end of the day, I am mostly talking to the practitioners on the shows. I want them to be on the show. I want people like them to be listening to the show.
Yeah. And just from the shows that we've been running, what we're finding is, like, the practitioners are typically the better people to talk to in general. Again, this is my experience. We're on about 10 shows, but, like, when you actually get to the people that hold the budget, unless this is, like, a really lofty strategy podcast, which there's a lot of those, but if it's, like, a real, like, tactics podcast, like this one, you know, some of the budget holders don't know the tactics. So, like, it typically ends up also being better content. And I don't know about you, what we've actually started to do with some of our shows is, like, we'll send it to the sales team. So they have, like, an inside scoop of, like, what the organization is doing. So it's getting into those tactics is super helpful.
Yeah. But what I'm running into now is with the agency owners that I reach out to, since they're owners, they're CEOs, they're founders, and I mean this in the kindest way, they've got giant egos. So when you invite them to come on a podcast, they're like, hell yes, absolutely. I'm happy to be on every podcast I can be. When I'm talking to a social media manager for a chain of hotels, they've never been on a podcast before. Nine times out of 10. They are all the time telling me, you're my first ever interview. And then I laugh because afterwards they tell me what a great interviewer I am. And I'm like, you've never been interviewed before. It's not like you're comparing me to Oprah. But okay. Anyways, they're the challenge. That's where I've been really struggling historically to get that practitioner audience to agree to come on a show because it's intimidating to them.
Because it's interesting. Some of the research that I've seen is that the booking rate on a show is somewhere in the ballpark of like 70 to 80% for a lot of audiences in a B2B context. But that, I mean, that you're in the lower end of that with the practitioners that have been on a show. So I'm curious for you as you're, because not the first time I've heard that from somebody. And we're working with some really niche shows and like, I've never been on a podcast and like, oh, that was a new challenge. So how do you help them feel more comfortable to actually join the show?
Well, that's a great question. So the first thing I do is I have a booking landing page where they can go and they can learn about the show. They can see other guests and they can see how I interview and how the show goes. And that alone usually sets a lot of people's minds at ease because they can see how it's going to run and they can get that familiarity. If they've never been on a show and they're nervous about being on camera and that sort of thing, they want to eliminate a lot of the unknowns. So we've got that for them. And then there's other information on the page. And I tell them from the start, I'm going to give you the questions in advance. My show is not a gotcha show. I'm not trying to trick people up. I want them to know going into it, these are the questions I'm going to be asked. And trust me, for folks listening who run podcasts, I understand the argument. I went to a podcast conference a year ago and I heard a panel just vehemently claim they would never give somebody the questions in advance, but their shows are different. I'm not a journalist. I mean, I may act like a journalist sometimes, but I'm not a journalist. And so to your point earlier, this is an ABM play. I'm trying to build relationships. I want people to be comfortable. And so I'm going to give them those questions in advance. Obviously, I'm going to advise them do not script answers. Some people do. It's kind of unavoidable. But that's the trade-off that I have, is I want them to feel comfortable going into it. The other important point, too, is because I am trying to build a relationship with a brand, not just the individual, I have to recognize that sometimes the brand is going to have policies in place. You know, I'm interviewing somebody this afternoon. We're recording this in mid-January. My interviewee this afternoon had to have the questions approved by PR and legal, her marketing team, right? And so I want them to be on the show. To be frank, I don't care what they say. I mean, just be perfectly transparent here. You know, my CEO, this is partly his idea. He and I have had many conversations and we're like, you know, we could talk about baseball for 30 minutes. We don't care. It's about building the relationship. So that's what I do. I give them a landing page that has them be able to see quickly and easily what the show feels like and then read the questions. Now, one of the things I had to do early on, because I launched all of these shows in 2024, I've had fortunately already done a lot of podcasting and live shows and interviews and webinars and virtual summits and so on. So I had some street cred, some social proof that I was able to share before we even recorded a single episode. I also turned to a lot of influencer friends for some of the first guest slots on some of these shows to fill in. And so we launched with 4 episodes plus a trailer, right? And a lot of them for all these podcasts were influencers, you know, or colleagues in the space who, you know, if I ask them to do something, they're going to say, absolutely, Mike, happy to do that. They don't even know what it is. They're happy to join me. That way, you know, the first time I went to an actual prospect, right, I had something to show them.
Yeah, it's exactly what we tell all of our shows that we help run. Is like, you know, because I'm sure you also are just so aware of all the shows, because so many people come to you to like help get their show launched or get advice, and like 90% of shows are failing after like 3 episodes. So we're just telling people, just like blitz the first 7, like just record 7 episodes, go talk to friendlies and like get them to do it as a favor for you. You get to the first 7, you actually feel more comfortable and confident as a host, and then you can actually then invite prospects. Because what we're seeing is actually a lot of hosts are uncomfortable talking to prospects on the front end because they're like, I don't even know how to be a host yet. So I'm sure for many people that are starting out from scratch, like the ability to just talk to friends and you just happen to press record and then you can kind of run with it. So I love that advice of just like, go get a couple of friends that are, I'm going to be super clear, like obviously intelligent and knowledgeable and in the space, but get a couple of friends, record a couple episodes, get it launched, and then you can have proof that you can point to for prospects you're trying to get. As you think through specifically the technology, this is one of the things that we get asked a lot. And like, I think a podcast tech stack is probably one of the most basic and like cheapest tech stacks in the APM space in general. So I'm curious, like what technologies are you guys using for your shows?
You're absolutely right. The biggest expense we have right now is that I outsource the editing because like many people, I can't stand the sound of my own voice. And if I had to edit all of my own podcasts, I would shoot myself. So I outsource all of that to another friend and colleague who does a fantastic job. And that's our single largest expense. Cool. From a tech stack specific perspective, for me, it actually starts with AI. I use Gemini, although you could use ChatGPT or Claude. And I've created what's called a set of custom instructions. So in Gemini, they're gems. In ChatGPT, they're custom GPTs. And the custom instructions are my showrunner. So instead of me spending hours researching a guest, coming up with questions and that sort of thing, I've explained to the AI, this is the show. Because remember, I got four. So I've with Agora Pulse and one of my own. So I've got four showrunners for Agora Pulse. Each set of instructions explains, you know, the premise of the show, the title, the target audience, the format of the show, and a set of step-by-step things where I say to the AI in a brand new chat, hey, I've got a new episode, would love your help preparing for it. And the AI says, cool, Mike, who's the guest? And I say, it's Mason Cosby. And the AI says, great, what's their LinkedIn? And I paste in their LinkedIn, which I had you give me in an onboarding form. And it says, cool, I can see that Mason does dot, 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 dot. And I did a Google search or a Bing search and found all these other things. Cool, what's the topic you want to talk about? And that's also something I ask in the onboarding form. Right? What's a challenge you've overcome in your business from a social media perspective? That's the typical question that I ask. So that gives them a chance to tell me what they'd like to talk about, copy and paste that into the AI. And the AI says, fantastic. Based on Mason's background and what he wants to talk about, here's five topics for the show you could do. And I pick one. And then it says, cool. Here's 10 titles for the show based on that topic. And I pick one, or maybe we go back and forth if I don't like it. And once it has the title, it gives me 10 questions, three takeaways, a description for the show, and a customized bio of the guest that I will read at the outset of the show. That's my pre-show document, which I send to the guest a day before the recording. So again, they're totally familiar with everything that I'm going to ask. That's the real key to me is having that. That took my prep time from 2 hours to 20 minutes per guest.
Wow.
Then I used a script to do, I have my own personal podcast, so I do all the editing there in Descript. The outsourcing editing team that I work with, they'll use some different tools. I think they're using the Adobe suite for their audio editing. We use Figma for graphics because we have a team, right? And we host with a organization called the Marketing Podcast Network that was founded by Jason Falls. So it's me and gosh, a couple dozen other podcasts that are part of this network. So we have shared ad revenue and then we cross promote on each other's shows. So that's fun, but it's basically, it's on Megaphone, Spotify hosted Megaphone, which is okay. If I was just to pick a host from scratch today, I would not pick Megaphone. One of the annoying things to me is I record a video podcast and when I upload to Megaphone, it sends the video to Spotify, but it only sends audio to Apple and YouTube and everywhere else. So I have to upload the audio or my team uploads the video separately to YouTube. What else tech stack wise? Then, so that's the host. And then for distribution, we use our own tool, Agora Pulse, for social media. That's a tool that allows us to schedule the posts everywhere. And one of the really fun things that we're able to do with Agora Pulse is it has a feature called advocacy, where you're able to import a list of advocates. It could be internal employees or external influencers. And our social media manager, every Thursday or every other Thursday, when we drop a new B2B edition episode, She shares the video snippet to LinkedIn with a nice post, tagging the guests and everything. And she pairs that with an advocacy campaign. So 150 employees and 150 external influencers all get an email inviting them to go engage with that LinkedIn post. So obviously that gets incredible engagement and boosts not only the episode, but the channel overall. That's the majority of the tech stack. Fairly simple, you know, once you boil it down. ChatGPT or Gemini, Descript, Figma or Canva, a tool like AgoraPulse for distribution.
I genuinely appreciate the call out of the distribution side. I always tell people, like, podcasts are not a easily discovered channel. Like, they actually have the worst discoverability of all time. They've got great depth, but if you're trying to grow a show, like, you really have to think through the promotional strategy. So I appreciate the call out specifically on how you actually get people to even listen to the show. The other thing I'm genuinely curious about is, as you then think through how you measure success, like, how do you then say, like, we're winning or losing? Because so many people, like, get caught up in what I would say are clear vanity metrics that are at times unreliable, like downloads. But I'm curious, like, how do you guys actually measure success?
This is a zero listens strategy. We don't care if people listen to the podcast. We genuinely don't. So yes, I'm watching downloads and listens. Yes, I'm frustrated to hell about how complicated it is to get good statistics on the podcast. Typically, we just pick a channel and, okay, well, that's representative. It's the best we're going to get. But what we really care about are the relationships. Who are we talking to? Right. Like, we just dropped an episode last week for the Hospitality Edition where I got to talk to the social media manager for Best Western Hotels, 4,700 hotels around the world, 100 countries. That was a fantastic conversation and a great prospect and logo, frankly, to have, you know, on the show and have that conversation start to build that relationship. So it's first and foremost relationships. One of the interviews that I had last week, the actual episode hasn't dropped yet, but And this is a great ABM tactic, folks. Pay attention. During the interview, I almost always ask one or two questions that, for me internally, they're leading questions. They have to do with our business model. So if I was interviewing you, Mason, at some point in the conversation, I'm going to ask you, how are you measuring the success of your social media efforts? Like, you asked me for success of podcasts. I'm going to turn around and, how are you measuring the success of your social media efforts, right? And I don't care how they answer. I'm going to pay attention, but we're not going to have a whole huge conversation about it in the episode. The episode's more about what they've been doing as a practitioner or whatever. When we're done, after I hit stop recording, we come back into the StreamYard studio green room, and they're relieved because, again, like I said, most of them have never been interviewed before, and they were nervous and whatnot. And they're like, oh, wow, okay, was that okay? And I'm like, no, yeah, you were fantastic. That was a great conversation. I loved your answers about this, that, and the next thing. And, you know, by the way, when I asked you how you were measuring social media, you know, you told me you were spending a couple hours a month digging into spreadsheets and manually copying and pasting data back and forth. And you talked about how you didn't like it very much. Would you like to see a tool that actually does all that for you in moments, and you don't have to spend hours and waste all kinds of time and money on that? Is that something, you know, I could have my team show you? I say it differently every time, but that's a sales pitch, right? Because they identified, and they're on video saying it, that they're doing something they shouldn't be doing, and I've got the solution for them. So we track those. We track those instances where I'm able to just directly refer the guest to sales or hook them up in some way. We use HubSpot and Salesforce, so we've got the whole CRM system going on. So that's the upfront stuff. On the back end, once episodes drop, then we're making sure, because you kind of hinted at this a moment ago, we're making sure our sales team knows, okay, Mike just talked to the social media manager for Best Western or Stanley Black & Decker or some other big brand, Microsoft, and here are some video snippets that you can share either directly to your social channels or in private messages to prospects. If you're talking to a hotel chain, particularly if you've had a nice conversation and you know some of the things that they're struggling with, and we've already talked about it in a previous podcast episode, share that episode with them. Share the clip, share the whole thing, whatever you want to do. So that's the other big metric for success that we're, to be transparent, trying to figure out how to actually measure. That's the challenge, right? We're arming them with this stuff, but we don't always know whether or not our sales team is actively using these assets. So one of the things that we're going to explore this quarter is using HubSpot's native podcast hosting feature, right? We're still going to host with our normal hosting company and not touch that. But we're also going to talk about uploading individual episodes to HubSpot and then using the HubSpot player as the embed on our blog posts or any landing pages and that sort of thing, making sure that it's the HubSpot asset that ends up getting shared. And if what we've been told can be believed, then we should get attribution then, right? If you're a prospect, you're already in HubSpot, and I share a link to a blog post that you go and you look at that and you click play on the HubSpot podcast player, we should know that in our analytics. So that's how we're hoping to be able to measure that final most important piece. How are these assets being used by sales?
I genuinely love that you since just outlined podcasts are great sales enablement. I've been preaching that for 3 years. Because I mean, it's just our team at times will ask us like, hey, what's our perspective on this? I'm like, I have done 140 episodes of a podcast on this topic. Like our perspective is pretty clear. So yeah, like just the ability to essentially also scale a perspective so that then everyone in your sales team just has the asset to say like, oh, here is our view on this specific thing at this time. Super helpful. Really just one last question for you is just, you know, as you think through roadblocks, you know, you already talked a little bit on the guesting front. Are there any other roadblocks or just general pieces of information and wisdom that you'd like to share with the audience as they're thinking about building out this kind of a program?
I would say be patient with your guests. If the industry and the target guests that you're trying to reach are anything like mine, like I said at the outset, it's going to be hard. Not everyone's going to be willing to be on a podcast if they've never done it before. If the company's never had anybody from their company be on a podcast before, it's going to be all new and it's going to be intimidating. And so my close rate and conversion rate to bookings is very, very low. So right off the bat, I had to be patient with myself and the process, which I did not know going into it. That was not the kind of podcasting that I'd been doing before. I had a different show, the MarTech show. I've had other kinds of shows where, gosh, my acceptance rate was probably 90%, right? If I ask somebody, you know, unless they're in the hospital, they're going to come on my show. That was not the case, obviously, with these shows. So that was a huge mental shift that I had to change, which also meant then I had to be patient with individuals who maybe agreed to be on the show, but then they've got 1,000 questions beforehand. They want to make sure that all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed. And so they're sharing it with their team and they're roping other people into the conversations. And I've just got to go with it. As much as I'd like to just jump into the recording and get it done, I have to take a step back and say, okay, they need to do what they need to do. And that also means sometimes being patient with guests who continually reschedule. I've had one guest reschedule 5 times. And, you know, if it was just an influencer that I wanted to be on the show, okay, probably the second time I'd have been, you know what, obviously this isn't a good fit. Don't worry about it. But it's not an influencer. It's a prospect. It's a prospect for a prominent B2B company that'd be a great fit for our organization. I would love to have them on the show. So as much as, again, I wish we would have just recorded the first time months ago, they keep pushing it back and, you know, I will keep accepting those reschedule. I use Calendly, by the way. I should have mentioned that in terms of the tech stack. Calendly is a godsend here because there's a beautiful reschedule link right there in the, you know, the calendar entry. So when the guest emails me the morning of a show and say, hey, you know, something come up, I can't make it, can we reschedule? I'm like, yeah, no problem. Hit the reschedule link, pick anytime you want. Next week, next month, I don't care. That's up to you. And I just have to take that philosophy that I am okay with that. And sometimes that's a little painful because I'm trying to stick to a publishing schedule and struggling to get guests for a couple of these shows and, you know, having these kinds of recurring rescheduling, that's wreaking havoc with our publishing calendar, but that's okay. I just have to be okay with that, which is different. For me, as an organizer, I am a very organized, detail-oriented showrunner. I have sheets after sheets after sheets. We're planning. I've got all this stuff in there. I have a content team that is looking to me to give them the newest content each and every other week that we're doing these things. And we just have to be okay with the fact, well, you know, next week we might not have an episode for one of these podcasts because we had a bunch of people reschedule over the holidays and we're just not ready and we're okay with that.
Yeah. I learned that one the hard way too. We went through this process of lining up like 30 guests. So I was like, we've got 6 months of content lined up, and then reschedules left and right, and spend hours just reshuffling your spreadsheet, or we used ClickUp and we stopped associating names to the episode releases until
right.
The episode was recorded. So we know we're going to release something this day. We'll figure that out once it's recorded. That was a godsend, at least from our editing team. So, Mike, this has been super informative. I have not actually incorporated that much from an AI on the pre-production side. We do some AI on the post-production, but I really love that, specifically around like guest prep and making sure that you are personalizing that experience for every guest. So I really love that. If people want to find out more about you or Agora Pulse, where would you send them?
Well, the first thing I'll say is that if your listeners want to get into using AI to help them with their podcast, I've got an article all about that on theaihat.com. That's where I'm publishing content about AI. That's where I have a whole other podcast all about AI for business and marketing. But agorapulse.com is our main website for Agora Pulse, the social media scheduler. And if you guys have questions for me specifically about how I'm doing podcasting, find me on LinkedIn.
Awesome. Mike, again, thank you so much for joining me today. This has been Scrappy ABM, and we will see you in the next one. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. If you're looking for more content just like this, I highly recommend you go subscribe to our newsletter. We release weekly playbooks so that you have the actionable ways in which you can start to build an ABM program today. Just go to scrappyabm.com/newsletter to subscribe. And if you enjoyed this episode, we'd really appreciate if you'd leave a 5-star review and hit the notification bell so you never miss an episode. I look forward to seeing you in the next one.